This message is brought to you by Nuveen. Nuveen has provided investment excellence for 125 years with expertise across income and alternatives. Nuveen continues to expand its capabilities while maintaining its legacy as a leading investment manager. Visit Nuveen.com to learn more. Investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible.
Coming up on the free-for-all, cable television, sports. Are you paying too much for sports? Do sports want their money back? What's going to happen to things? Are athletes going to actually start taking less money because you're not willing to pay a big fat cable bill? Matthew Futterman of the Wall Street Journal will be on to answer what might be the most important sports question of the next decade. Coming up, free-for-all.
You're listening to Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
Here is Jason Gay, and this is the Free For All. Today, on our Free For All podcast, we are joined by Wall Street Journal. What are you, the global sports columnist, the world sport guy, Matthew Futterman? Matt, what are you? What's your title?
My title is Senior Special Writer.
Now, we can do better than that,
but,
can't we?
God of all sport? Is that fancy, is that too... Is
fancy
too,
pants, I like to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, okay.
But you are a guy who covers sports not from a limited perspective, but you cover the world. Before we get into the topic that I really want to discuss with you, which is television and television rights and the potential for a crash and the payments that teams are able to get from networks, let's talk a little soccer, because last night the United States... They entered that game somewhat on the ropes, did they not? Had they lost?
Had they lost, it was basically over.
Over?
The U.S. was not going to go to Russia because they were going to fail to get out of a group in the qualifying tournament to get into the qualifying tournament.
I mean, so this stakes like, were high.
Yeah, they were going to fail to get out of a group that included world powers Trinidad, yeah. Guatemala, yeah. And St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Oh. Is that one team, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, or are those two teams?
That is one team.
Okay.
St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
And so the great United States juggernaut of a couple years ago in Brazil, which advanced to, remind me again, the quarters?
Round of 16.
Round of 16.
But it's so funny that you say quarters, because they sort of played it off as if they had kind of won the thing a little bit, almost.
Yeah.
If you they really just survived the group and then... Lost valiantly,
right?
In
to
the
Germany,
round of 16.
No, to Belgium.
To Belgium,
that's
yes.
Right.
Okay. They did lose to Germany before they.
It's
lost
all
to Belgium.
Just one big blur in the bottom of a. What were those Caipirinhas?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Caipirinhas. Yes.
But they didn't lose last night.
They did not lose.
They
last
won
night.
Impressively 4-0.
They won 4-0 after having lost to Guatemala 2-0 Friday night in Guatemala. Come back, win. 4-0 in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Nobody messes with Team USA in Columbus, Ohio, in map-free stadium, which actually they do have a really good record in that stadium. But
and was this one of those aggregate kind of numbers where they had to have an outscore them? Or
no, this is a four-team round robin played over the course of 10 months.
Yeah.
And two teams with the most points advance to what is called the Hex, which is the six-team double round-robin qualifying tournament for the World Cup.
So now it looks as though they're in.
Well,
they'd have to screw it up royally.
They are in second place in the group.
Yeah.
A mere 1 point ahead of Guatemala. They have to get some points on the road against St. Vincent and then at home against Trinidad. They really should move on, but look, they should never have been in this position in the first place.
The tricky thing here, and I think for the great majority of people who tune into the international soccer come World Cup time, they're a little bit oblivious as to what these matches mean right now, and we're 2 years out still from Russia, and we're having these conversations about these urgent soccer games. It's a little confusing, but
a little
more than a little confusing. But the tricky thing for the U.S. national team is the idea that you have to do two things. You have to qualify for the tournament, which is the utmost important thing to qualify for the World Cup. But secondly, you have to reconstitute the team. I mean, you have to, whatever you're doing in terms of making a better team, you're doing it during this period. So you're both building a team and trying to win games. And that doesn't necessarily always correspond, we find in sports. And there's been a little bit of pressure, a little bit of heat on Jurgen. Do you expect that to die down a little bit after last night, or will the heat be back on soon?
No, I think the heat is going to be on him completely, especially in June, when the U.S. is hosting the Copa America Centenario.
Mm-hmm.
Copa America is
That's usually right.
South America's championship,
yes.
But because we need to make some money,
yeah.
They decided to hold a special Copa America to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Copa America in the U.S. And the U.S. is playing in that tournament with the 10 South American teams and 5 other teams from North and Central America and the Caribbean, who are the better teams, and they are in a rather tough group in that tournament.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if they don't get out of that group, there's going to be lots of heat on Jurgen. And even if they get out of that group and then, you know, go out in the next game, I think there's a lot of heat on him.
But he's still going to be the manager in Russia, is he not? I mean, there's no imaginable circumstance where he's not.
If they're going to Russia, if they do go through and qualify, he's going to be the manager unless he gets bored or decides not to. He makes $3 million a year. He's got a contract. It would be really expensive for them to fire him. Having said that, I don't get the sense that there's a lot of love for Jurgen on the team at this point.
And among the players.
Yeah, among the players.
Yeah.
I mean, he plays a lot of head games with them.
Oh, yeah.
He's not particularly close with any of them.
No, not a warm and fuzzy guy.
Not warm and fuzzy,
yeah.
Kind of aloof.
Yeah.
And
Sink or swim,
but also it can sort of verge on condescending at some point, or at least I think they feel that way. And look, they need some tough love. They haven't really accomplished all that much.
Yeah.
And so they need somebody stepping on their necks.
In the time you've been covering the sport, Matt, we've seen this blossoming of American soccer fandom, not just for the U.S. national team, but for the global game and, you know, the way that games are available, both on cable television, on the internet. We see the incredible excitement for Premier League here in this country now.
You don't sound very excited.
I'm excited.
Come on.
I'm excited, but is there a sophistication now that you find in the audience following the stuff that you're right about that wasn't necessarily there even as little as 5 or 6 years ago?
I think absolutely. I think people were... It just, you know, where most people are just sort of happy to see a bunch of guys wearing red, white, and blue run around and, you know, being invited to the big party. It's like sort of like when you were not a freshman in high school, but like a sophomore in high school, fall of sophomore year.
Like getting invited to junior prom.
And you get
You're a junior prom.
Like getting invited to like the upperclassmen's party.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe you have an older brother and he's got a friend who's
just
on.
Just being able to say you were there was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was at Ted's. Yeah. It was kind of lame, but it was all right. It was pretty, you know, you just play it off as cool. So like, I think there was a fair amount of that feeling.
Yeah.
And now it's like, we want to be the party.
Right.
Like, we are the party.
Right.
Or we want to think we're the party. We're not actually the party. But I think there's a sense that we should be at that party.
Now, we have 2 years to get worried about the World Cup in Russia and what that will be like to cover. But coming right up, as sooner than we'll know it, are the Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. And, you know, we've been reading about the bad water for years now. We've been reading about protests and economic shortcomings and all the myriad of reasons we should be concerned about Zika. And yet, separate out for me sort of the tried ritual of people freaking out about an Olympiad before it happens, which we always see, versus some real legitimate concerns about Rio's ability to host this thing?
Rio is going to be able to put on an Olympics that looks awesome on television.
Yeah. I mean those helicopter shots?
The helicopter shots are going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Beach volleyball on Copacabana Beach.
Yeah.
Some of the matches are going to be like at midnight. Wow. I mean, they're going to set up.
Yeah. So lunchtime.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's going to look like the most awesome party going.
Yeah.
Because there's a part of Rio, you know, that sort of five-block area along the water that really is, like, the most awesome party going.
It's otherworldly. I mean, you know, Rio, when you fly into Rio de Janeiro, you look at it, and it's as if you're in some sort of George Lucas Star Wars movie. You can't believe this is an actual real thing in the world.
Yeah, you can't believe that, and you've seen pictures of it for years.
Yeah.
And I mean, the first time I was there, I really couldn't quite believe I was there.
Yeah.
Like, wow, yeah. Look at there's those two mountains. Yeah. That,
how
that,
did they do this?
Right. Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's absolutely spectacular looking.
Right.
And so I think it will look really, really great on television. I think it's going to be really exciting competition, as the Olympics almost always are. I think there's going to be like a real buzz about it. I think it's going to be really hard to get from point A to point B if you're there on the ground as a fan. I'm not too totally worried about the bugs. then again, I'm not a woman of childbearing age.
Let's clarify. We're talking about the mosquitoes, not the bugs we were worried about in Sochi.
Right. Yeah. I'm not too worried about the Zika-carrying mosquitoes.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm not a woman of childbearing age.
Sure.
I probably would be if I were a woman of childbearing age or thinking about getting into that point in my life.
Yeah.
I totally get it, especially given the way these female athletes live their lives and have to incorporate or want to incorporate having a family with their careers. You know, you take two women on the soccer team, like Carly Lloyd and Hope Solo. Hope is recently married, in her mid-30s. Carly Lloyd is getting married after the Olympics, also in her mid-30s. They've given everything to their athletic careers. They actually have a couple of gold medals. They've won World Cups. I mean, you can totally understand why they would sort of be like, do I really want to...
Have they said anything?
Well, Hope Solo has said, like, she is thinking about not going.
Really?
And, you know, I totally understand that. Sonia Richards-Ross, this is, like, on her mind a lot. She, you know, is married. Her husband, Aaron Ross, a football player, is, like, you know, as she put it, he said, as soon as you cross that finish line, we are starting a family. You know, so she is... You know, that is the next thing for her. This is a thing. It's a genuine concern. Sonia Richards-Ross said there's always something in Beijing. It was the pollution we were all worried about. Yeah. There's always something, and I just
London and Sochi were terrorism.
Right,
were the big things.
I have faith that they're gonna be able to protect us.
Vaguely informed comparison here coming. But in the World Cup, I have found in even this era of the hyper-corporatized world sporting event, you can't suck the life out of the World Cup. It is just present. And when you saw in Rio, you know, the fans from Argentina, the fans from Chile, obviously the Brazilian fans, the fans from around the world, the energy, the excitement, and you felt like you were in Brazil. One of the things about the Olympics I have found in the few that I've gone to is that the Olympics work very hard sometimes to suck the host country out of the event. And you don't feel like you're actually in. Now, you do a
suck
little...
Suck them out of the event or into the event?
You suck it out of it. Like that you could actually feel like this is taking place
on a soundstage
in Burbank, California. And that's what I feel is sometimes the hazard. I understand the compulsion to do it from a security standpoint, from a we've done this before and this is how we do it standpoint, sort of like franchising the Olympics. But it would be a shame if the Olympics just were sort of taking place on this Brazilian enclosure and not really integrated into one of the world's great cities.
Look, I think they're really trying hard to integrate it. It's a challenge, and it's not like the World Cup because a lot of these sports are not really all that big in Brazil.
Oh,
I mean, Brazilians are like massive soccer fans, and they like volleyball, but, you know, tennis is not very big in Brazil.
Why is the tennis happening on the hard court and not clay? That seems like a crime.
I think it's because it was the easiest thing for them to build in the Olympic Park.
Does Gustavo Kuerten, did he say anything about this? It just seems like...
I have not heard, I have not spoken with Gustavo lately, but yes, it would be interesting because I think Gustavo, if he were playing in the French Open, I think he might actually do all right, even at his advanced age.
You know, that he was Neymar's... athletic idol growing up.
Really? Okay.
Isn't that amazing?
Makes complete sense.
We're going to come right back after this break with Matt Futterman, and we're going to talk about TV and sports TV rights and whether the whole thing is going to start circling down the drain. Coming up on the Free For All.
Hi, this is Kevin Sintemong.
This is Beth Cracklauer.
Check us out on the Off Duty podcast. We talk about food,
cocktails,
all of the finer things in life.
Check us out at wsj.com/podcast
and become a subscriber on iTunes.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Now, back to the show.
Okay, so one of my pet topics is sports TV, and specifically the sports TV rights, quote-unquote, bubble. The idea that this glory of expansion in terms of payments to leagues and conferences and teams that has taken place over the past generation is really the byproduct of enormous volatility in the media industry, and that eventually it's going to pop. And what will be the impact upon teams and conferences and colleges and athletes? You know, will salaries start to trickle down? And there was a great story in the Journal. Great story the other day. Had sort of a, you know, meh headline: cost of sports TV raises stakes in Mankey's Comcast fight. But buried within that, underneath that headline, was a terrific story from the Journal's Joe Flint and Matt Futterman about this very concern. And to start it off, Matt, you know what you guys were talking about specifically are these mega local television deals, which have been very influential in the sport of baseball. That markets like Los Angeles, here in New York with the New York Yankees, I think Seattle had another big deal. They have the ability to basically keep franchises in the black without putting one butt in the seat. But what is the volatility in the media economy going to do to those things?
Yeah, it's a real problem down the line. It's not like a tomorrow problem. But these RSNs, these regional sports networks, have essentially propped up both the pay television industry and the sports industry for somewhere of about 15 years or so.
And so if people know what we're talking about, like, you know, Fox Sports West and Fox Sports, you know, Los Angeles and yes, here in New York and
Nesson
Comcast
in Boston.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And they pay tons of money to get the rights to almost all of the favorite home teams' games.
Yeah.
And
so they'll have your baseball team, your hockey team, your basketball team.
And then they go to the local cable companies and they say, your subscribers cannot live without this channel. They need their Red Sox. They need their Celtics.
And that is not a wrong thing to say. There is a sliver of the population for whom that is the only reason they get cable television.
Yeah, they make that argument, and they it's exclusive content. It's not repeatable. You know, if you have a hit, Grey's Anatomy. You know, if ABC has Grey's Anatomy, okay, CBS can think really hard, and they
no one's streaming Red Sox games from 3 weeks ago.
Right, they can come up with and there's no other there's nothing else that can substitute for the Red Sox either.
That's right.
So it's
your head against a metal pail last year would have sufficed. But yes, I know what you mean.
So they make that argument, and for years the pay television distributors, Comcast and DirecTV and Cablevision, have said, yeah, you're right. And they've basically paid them whatever they've asked just so they could get it. And here, what has changed is that they've gotten a lot smarter about measuring just how intensely their customers are watching these channels and watching everything.
Yes.
The technology of observing what you're observing through that set-top box is very, very good. And they can tell, you know, down to the minute and probably down to the second how much time I spend watching New York Rangers hockey games, which is a lot. I mean, they would say, if we don't have the Rangers, Futterman is going to cancel his cable subscription, right. Which is entirely possible. But, you know, they can do that. And I think what they've been seeing the last few years is that the intensity with which people are watching these channels has been going way down. And since these are the most, by far, the most most expensive channels that they carry, they are pushing back. And
what do you mean by intensity? Like that people are not, you know, tuned in as frequently and watching as long as they would have,
yes,
in the past?
Okay. Both of those things. Got frequency. Frequency and as long, and that there's no real sort of rhyme or reason to it. It's okay. Not necessarily that, oh, everybody, it's September, it's right. The pennant race, okay. Everybody's watching the Yankees.
So it's the carriers are coming back now.
Yes.
To these rights holders.
And they're saying, you know what? This guaranteed stream of revenue that we've been giving, that we've been paying your channels. And a lot of these channels are partly owned by the teams themselves.
This is another.
They're coming back to them and saying, you know what? We don't think we should be paying you $6 million a month.
Yeah,
it's just, and that's really what it is. I mean, it's millions and millions of dollars every month, because our people can live without this.
Yeah,
and the real problem for the teams and the leagues is that they have these contracts with these regional sports networks that, they don't have a lot of wiggle room. They've signed over all of their media rights to them, so they can't say, okay, we can't give the games that way. They're not available that way. We'll just, you know, sell them game by game on the phone. So that's a real problem. They don't have alternatives. So they're tied into this system that is going away because, A, people aren't watching as intensely as they were. They're not buying cable subscriptions or pay television subscriptions anywhere near the way they used to, and they're getting rid of their pay television subscriptions. There's the cord cutters. There's the cord nevers. There's the cord I won't even think about it in my life.
And then we've seen disputes. I mean, we've seen it in Los Angeles going on what now? It's the second year.
This is the third season. That
right
more than 50% of Los Angeles is not going to be able to watch Dodger games.
And I know it's sort of a complicated mess, but what is the one sentence explanation of what the hell is happening there?
The Dodgers started their network. They said it was going to cost a lot of money for everyone to distribute it. I mean, when I say everyone, I mean the pay television companies to distribute it. The pay television companies said, yeah, we don't want to pay that money, and we think there's a lot of other things to do in Los Angeles, and we don't think people will really care. So they haven't put it on, and they haven't lost customers.
And when does the rubber hit the road in terms of the impact? You said this is not a tomorrow story, but theoretically, when do you start to feel an impact upon some of these franchises that are relying on that revenue stream to, you know, meet goals and also pay salaries?
When the regional sports networks realize that they're tied into these very bad long-term deals, and they're not going to make, and they're going to lose a tremendous amount of money on it, and they go to the teams and they say, you know what, we have to renegotiate this. Yeah. Like, this is not going to work for us.
And it's already happening.
Yeah, well, in Houston, Comcast, they tried to start a regional sports network, and they were losing tons of money, and they put it into bankruptcy. And they forced Houston, the Astros, and the Rockets to find other partners and relaunch, and it's still struggling. But, you know, it does eventually, if people are losing a ton of money, they start to do what is necessary to stop losing a ton
of
money.
Now, I want to ask you this, that I've had this theory for a long time that what things like the NFL and, you know, professional basketball with the giant rights deal that they signed, you know, last year with Turner and ESPN going forward, effectively are just getting wildly overpaid. I mean, they have the good fortune of having this product at a time when, again, there's just incredible turbulence in the market, and they are offering a very desirable thing, which is a great demographic watching live. You know, it's commercial, it's DVR proof, as they say. And networks who are desperate for that are willing to overpay for it as a quote unquote loss leader kind of thing. I'm not to say that you'd lose money like the way you used to on, say, Monday Night Football, but there's no way that it's worth the value that they're being paid for it.
Right, because they've understood that, or they've felt for a very long time that the pay television companies, you know, they were just going to say, okay, we'll pay whatever it takes because we're going to lose customers over this. Right. And what Comcast is doing here with YES is they're doing a test. They're saying, let's see what happens if we don't pay for the most popular team in the largest market. Yeah. And let's just see if it doesn't – let's just see what the impact is. Yeah. Now – baseball season may start and they may lose 20% of their customers, in which case they'll make a deal the next day to prevent that from happening. I don't think that's going to happen.
There's a story out there for somebody to do. I don't want to give away a good story idea, but what the hell. I feel like we are in this era now of media consumption where, you know, for many, many years we had these, you know, rating systems and these sort of vague ideas of how people were consuming media, whether it was whether they read their newspaper, how many people got a copy of it, you know, they would fill out reader surveys every once in a while. Books, it was like, oh, we'd, you know, call a sample of booksellers on the phone and, you know, ask them what. And now you have BookScan. It tells you exactly. And now newspapers have exact data points on how many people are reading stories online. They even know when people stop reading stories online. You don't need reader surveys anymore. The data is all there. Same with music. Same with terrestrial radio. You don't have these sort of like quantified ratings. You actually know. You know now. You know the numbers. And the numbers, by and large, are terrifying.
They're not your friends.
They are not your friends. And you have these crazy unicorns, whether it's Taylor Swift or 50 Shades of Grey or NFL football. But by and large, the product is being underconsumed for what it's being valued at.
For the most part. I mean, Nielsen has been good with macro things.
Sure.
Nielsen is pretty good at getting to the number of people who watch an event nationally.
But Nielsen is
a lot less good at telling you who's watching something locally. But the pay television companies know exactly who's watching
these things.
And they know it down to, like,
but
I said, down
even,
to the second.
Even but they don't, more they intriguingly, don't tell people. They don't tell people, but they also are saying that it's not important. And I feel like what's happening in TV is fascinating in the respect that it's really not about who's winning the night. It's this Darwinian struggle for this assumed over-the-top world that's going to happen inevitably and perhaps, you know, within 18 months to 3-4 years, everyone's going over the top, or mostly everyone is. And it just, all that matters is that people want your network channel. It doesn't matter if your zombie show is getting, you know, a 30 share or a 12 share or a 0.3 share. As long as there's enough people who will pay to get your network, that's the game, right?
Which is so strange because if you talk to anybody at NBC, they have for years said, oh yeah, there's a big audience for comedy on Thursday nights on NBC. I mean, for like 20 years, that was sort of part of their business plan. Oh yeah, there's our Thursday night comedy audience. I don't think teenagers have any idea what network most of their shows are shown on.
Oh, we've talked about this on this podcast before. If you ever want to get an appreciation for where television is headed, talk to anybody under the age of 20 about television. It is mind-boggling.
Right.
They look at us with our remotes and think we're nuts.
Completely nuts.
Yeah.
Like, what is that? What are you doing?
What's that thing on the wall?
Right. Which is so weird to me because I feel like it was just yesterday that we were all so excited about these awesome new TVs that were thin and big and clear. And we could sit in our living rooms and just love them. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, and they felt sort of modern and cool. And really, like, in the flick of a switch, there's this whole group of people who are like, why do you need that big thing? I can just watch this on my watch.
Totally.
And you're sort of like, what? Why would it's just a complete shift that I certainly didn't see coming.
It's a wild world. As always, check out Matthew Futterman's writing in the Wall Street Journal. And Matt, we should mention before saying goodbye here, you have a book coming out in April. What day in April?
It is coming out on April 26th.
April 26th. It's called Playas. Or Players.
Yes.
Players. And what's the long subhead?
The long subhead is the story of sports and money and the visionaries who fought to create a revolution.
I love it. And you're excited about this? You just got the hardback?
Sure. I'm totally excited about it. It's it's the definitive story about the creation of the modern sports world. How's that for a one sentence?
I love it. We'll have you back on the show to sell dozens and dozens of copies of Playas. And thanks for joining me on the free-for-all. Next week, the Journal's Brian Costa with a Masters preview. Yeah, there's golf coming. Coming up, free-for-all.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.